Welcome, everyone, to the fifth installment of Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney-Smith. Thank you for joining Productivity Book Group on the live call or on the podcast listening on iTunes or in your favorite podcatcher. We'll be discussing David Allen's second book in his GTD trilogy, if you will, Ready for Anything. This discussion will cover part one, Clear Your Head for Productivity or Getting Loose Ends to Leave You Alone. This includes chapters 1 through 13, which are very short essays in sort of quick succession. In David Allen's clear and sort of tongue-in-cheek style, he covers some really great material in these succinct but cogent essays. So let's get the discussion started. Welcome, everybody. First, I'd like to start off with chapter 1. He talks about identifying the areas you need to improve in your productivity system. And I'm curious about what folks on the line have in terms of where they think they can identify or ways in which you can identify areas you need to improve in your productivity system. So I'll start off, which is that I always find that when there is some kind of pattern of pain, in my mental pain or otherwise in my life, that's usually a sign that my productivity system needs some help. I'm curious about other folks in terms of identifying areas of food there.
This is Michelle. I find when I'm starting to feel that same sort of pain, that actually means to me that I need to review. Even if I just did it yesterday, it means like things are starting to feel a little iffy in my head. And I'm starting to try and do it all by memory as opposed to using my system like I should be.
Oh, absolutely. And so do you do that in terms of a daily review, a weekly review, some other kind of review process?
You know, that's a good question. Actually, I used to do a daily review. So I sort of set up my system. I use start dates so that I don't have to see too much extra stuff at any given point. I'm really seeing what I've already sort of decided is my streamlined approach, especially I'm talking work stuff at the moment, right?
Start date is an application or
just I'm sorry. I mean, I use start dates in my system. I use OmniFocus. Instead of just having a big old list of everything that's that I could possibly be doing at any given moment, I guess it's a way of prioritizing. Like I decide that, you know, X project is important this week, that project is important this week, and this one is not. So it gets pushed out for a start date like the following week or something like that. So it doesn't show up in my available tasks. So basically I normally do a daily review and I guess you're right. It's when I don't do the normal daily review of just the items that are available to me and you know, sort of renegotiate at the top of the day whether or not they are important at the moment. That's when I do feel a little bit of a pinch into my system.
Oh,
it's not my system, it's me.
I definitely understand that. Absolutely.
So, I have to agree with Michelle. I have the same issue, but I actually have a note on my calendar that fires off at noon that says, hey, Denise, did you look at your list today yet? Because I'll start the day knowing what I'm supposed to do, and then a fire breaks out somewhere, and I'm out and about, and then it's like, oh, wait, I forgot to do that phone call, or I forgot to do this or that. And it's 5 o'clock by then. So I actually have a note that says, hey, you better look at what your today list is. That goes at noon and reminds me to just look at it one more time. But I don't do a full review. I do the full review once a week.
That's really great. I have several reminders in the morning for me to start what I call my daily productivity ritual, and I'll probably do a podcast episode on that sometime in the future. But the idea of sort of a reprompting sometime later in the morning or midday in case you haven't done it is a really great idea. I really like that.
Yeah, me too.
I have a list that I look at. I have a morning routine, but I can check by the time I check my email at 8 o'clock, the whole day could just be totally turned sideways. So it's just a way of reminding myself, hey, especially if it's something important that I know I need to follow up on.
I can relate. So how do you, this is still in chapter one, how do you identify your next project or next action to do when you're not sure what else you should be doing? He sort of talks about this again, if my notes are correct, again in chapter...
Is it two? You can only feel good about what you're not doing when you know what you're doing.
Yeah, he talks about them in chapter 2 again also, but then he brings it back up in a later chapter, somewhere in when all things are equal, how do you do those things that you might want to do? It'll come back to me. It was like chapters 8 or 9 or something like that. But the point is that, you know, how do you identify your next project, your next action, when all things are equal or you just don't know where to start? For me, I know that I tend to look at things from a perspective of if I'm not sure of why I'm doing something, I should look up in my system, sort of go up to the higher level. And if I'm feeling like I don't know how to do something, I should work on moving down in those levels of systems and sort of what or how to do something. Then I'm supposed to be looking down to sort of figure those things out from a sort of vertical planning perspective. So I'm curious what other folks do in that regard.
Well, this is Michelle. So for me, I would assume that I've already made all those decisions, right? Let's pretend.
Right.
Yeah, so all things being equal, I guess based on, you know, it's really based on my areas of focus and what's a priority in terms of maybe, you know, so we're not talking like time available and energy levels because that's part of the all things being equal, although those are definitely part of the decision-making process and what I'm going to attack next. But If for instance, so in my former work life, I used to manage projects. So there was a whole slew of that happening, and then I was also managing the business. So it was sort of like a balancing act between the two very different job titles, let's call it, you know, managing the business and then managing the projects. So if I'd been focusing a lot on managing the projects recently and sort of, you know, the managing the business was going to the wayside, I would try and be aware of that and try and make sure that I was still, even though those things weren't on fire, I would still try and make sure that I'm spending time on those projects because they're still super important to the business, you know, and vice versa. So if my head's been down in the weeds on, you know, bigger projects, sometimes you need to look back and see what's going on in the smaller projects, the ones that are maybe not the main focus at the moment, but still need attention. I don't know if that's helpful. It's kind of roundabout, but you get.
Yeah, I'm sure it's helpful to many people who are listening. I think that's really important to know the difference. And I want to sort of move on in chapter one. We have a lot to cover. And David talked about this idea of forgiveness as an important principle in life. I think that's true. And I'm curious if anyone on the line has a way, a method, or technique for forgiving yourself. I think it's really important for people to sort of have that mechanism in place. And especially for the folks listening to the podcast, you know, the idea of forgiveness is something that really works well to making sure that you don't wrench your productivity system. And so for me, I have this thing about perfection, that is progress is the new black, or imperfection is the new black. You know, the idea of, you know, fashion, the fashion concept. But I tend to look at it as if I try to be perfect, then I'm always going to be imperfect. But if I try to be imperfect, then I'm going to always succeed on some level. And so I look at progress as perfection, progress as the goal, and therefore it allows me to forgive that I did my best in a circumstance, and that was the goal for me, as opposed to looking at it from the perspective that I was looking for some, you know, perfectly cornered square when I knew that the thing that I was going to draw was going to be imperfect at its core. So I sort of look at it from that perspective. I'm curious if other people's perspectives on forgiveness.
Sure. Well, perfection is a hard thing. I mean, you know, there's you don't want to strive like, well, I'm talking from my personal experience. I don't want to strive for less than the best I could do. But it's a hard lesson to realize that, you know, there's the best you could do at the moment. And then there's like, you know, like you said, perfectly square corners. And then there's, you know, a crappy job. So there's different levels. and like doing your best in a given moment, which is not perfection, is not the same thing as doing a crappy job, you know? And I think for perfectionists myself included, that's hard to recognize. It's sort of like if it's not the absolute best it could possibly be, done by a robot and blah 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 kind of thing, then it's not good enough. And it's a really what you're bringing up is a really good point. It's very hard to sort of be accepting of a good job, that meets the requirements, does follow, does what the intent was of the whatever the action in the project or whatever, fulfills the needs, but isn't necessarily the most stellar thing ever. Doesn't mean that it's not good, though, and it's hard to see the difference.
Absolutely, and I think it's sort of interesting because, I had a boss once who used to say, I'd rather see progress with stakes along the way than to see a project not move forward.
Right.
It made a whole lot of sense to me back then because I always looked at things from the perspective that if I was going to do it at all, it wasn't going to be 110%, I was always like, no way, not even going to address that issue until I can do it 110%. And I realized that so many things in life were not getting done because I was hung up on that idea of perfection. It always has to be perfect. And everybody in my life had told me that. It had told me that up until that point that perfection was the standard. And perfection is never a standard. It's setting you up for failure time and time again.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's probably the thing. That's probably really the thing. Like, if you are such a perfectionist that you're actually like immobile on your project, then it's something to be worried about. But if you're a perfectionist, or you feel like you're a perfectionist, but you're still moving forward on your project, you probably have some room to give yourself a break because you're not completely immobile. So even there, you need to give yourself a little forgiveness,
I completely agree. Yeah. In chapter 2 now, David talks about the concept of mind sweeps and some other sort of review concepts. Do you do mind sweeps on a regular basis, semi-regular basis, as needed? And what does something like that look like for you? I'm really curious about a format that you use. Do you use a list, a mind map, or another method? I know that for myself, when I do mind sweeps, I typically do that on sort of a free-form piece of paper, and it typically is in a notebook so that I don't have bits of paper or sheets of paper hanging around. I think that, of course, when my life and system start to show me signs that there's something going on in my life or if my life is doing something where I know something's going on, I tend to waver from that structure. But I know that in a regular sort of normative fashion, I'll jump to my notebook and I will start to freeform, make lists or mind map when I need to do a mind sweep.
This is Denise. I kind of do that too, Ray. I usually will start just drawing something out on a piece of paper. There's something about that as opposed to typing up a list or at, I don't know, even using my iPad. Something about a pencil and a piece of paper just laying everything out really helps.
Yeah, I just recently installed this app called Inkflows, and it's this really cool tool that lets you sort of doodle and draw and brainstorm and so on and so forth. But I have to agree with you. There's something about the kinesthetic quality of working pen ink on paper that really seems to trigger more energy and better ideas working. I guess it relieves me better of sort of whatever is blocking me.
This is Michelle. I do. I kind of capture all that stuff as it comes to me. I have OmniFocus on my phone and that connects, syncs wirelessly and seamlessly to my desktop version. And I just sort of, I capture every thought. I got into the habit of really like capturing every thought, that's a potential project, even if I just write down, not into like task or action words, but like the thought, the project, so to speak. But when I do sit down to do like to think through a project, or like maybe in my weekly review, I do always sit for a couple minutes and try and think: is there anything that I was thinking about that I didn't capture? And then I'll capture it into my system. But I agree with you guys. I like to think things through on paper with a pen. It's just there's something about the connection.